This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
In my opinion, the most remarkable is not really the fact of live birth, but the extent of regeneration they showed with such a large graft, that's remarkable, I think.
That is Mats Hellström discussing a paper by Anthony Atala and colleagues, and this is Forum. All right, you have found Forum, our podcast where we take papers recently published in Our Pages, Nature Biotechnology, or other research journals, and then we discuss those papers with leading researchers in the field. My name is Brady Huggett. For this one, I'm again with Irene Harsham. She's a senior editor at Nature Biotechnology. And for this, Irene spoke to two different people, and we talked about why that is in the intro. So let's just get to that. Here is Irene and I setting up this paper, episode 6 of Forum. Here you go. All right, so I've read this paper. Just tell me what the major findings are.
So in this paper, what they're trying to do is they're trying to show that you can use scaffolds that have been cellularized, recellularized with cells from rabbits to repair injuries that the researchers themselves caused on the rabbits. And so they take a large group of rabbits and they cause substantial injury to the uterus and then place these scaffolds and then sacrifice the rabbits at different time points to check histologically at how the organ is recovering. And then a subset of the animals is allowed to mate naturally. And they show that some of the rabbits become pregnant and have rabbit babies.
And so let's talk about that. Why use rabbits as the model here?
Because similar work has been done with other scaffolds in rodents, mice and rats, I think largely rats. But those animals are smaller. So obviously what you can learn in those models is more limited if you're working towards translating something to humans, an organ the size of humans. And also because it's been reported that those, you know, smaller models, the rodents, have some degree of intrinsic regenerative capacity. And so you would want to study this in a relevant model.
Yeah, right. So that by moving it to rabbits, you remove that ability to regenerate their organs.
That's
small. Right. Okay. And so also for this, you spoke to two different people. Who did you speak with?
I spoke to Mats Brandström and to Mats Hellström. They both have the same first name. And they actually both work in the same department. They both work at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden. And Mats Brandström is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology. He's the past president of the uterus transplantation society. And he is somebody who is very familiar with treating patients who have injuries to their uterus. As a matter of fact, he was involved in the first successful uterus transplantation in the world, which was done in Sweden. So he has a very strong clinical perspective. He also does a lot of research in the area in which this paper is advancing. And so I spoke to somebody else in his group who works very closely with the animal models and with the scaffolds themselves, not these specific scaffolds, but, and so that's Mats Hellström. He provides more of the engineering and research perspective in these two interviews. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but just tell me why it was important to speak with a clinician or someone who has clinical experience.
I think in this case, it was really important because the relevance of the paper, although, you know, there's an interesting engineering side to this, this group has published similar scaffolds before, and other groups have published similar scaffolds. So the novelty here is not so much in the scaffolds themselves, but in the fact that they're going from a lot of studies in rodents with very small patches to small injuries in the uterus to a larger animal model, not large animal model, but moving in that direction. And these are larger injuries that they're repairing. And so I think those things are important. And the main goal of the work is to move towards humans and to solve this problem for many women who have injuries to their uterus, or potentially down the road one day to women who are born without a uterus. So you want to hear, I think, in this case, especially from a doctor who treats those patients, who can give us that perspective.
Yeah. Okay. So then just tell me the name of the paper, the corresponding authors.
So this paper is titled A Tissue Engineered Uterus Supports Live Births in Rabbits. Uh-huh. And the corresponding author is Tony Atala from Wake Forest in North Carolina.
Okay. Off you go.
You know, the paper that we're going to talk about today is the Atala paper on the scaffolds. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit more generally about the field. The first cases of uterus transplantation were done in Sweden, correct? And I believe that you were involved in those.
Yeah, I was the team leader for the first successful case. But we did our first case in 2012. And 2013, and we got the first live birth in 2014, and that was the first one in the world. But there had been two cases attempts before, in Saudi Arabia 2000 and in Turkey 2011, but they were not able to produce any pregnancy, so it was only the surgery.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of conditions necessitate a uterus transplantation? Are these conditions that are acquired in adulthood, or are the individuals born with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can either have no uterus, and that could be from a congenital malformation. It's called the MRKH syndrome. It affects about 1 in 5,000 women. Or you can acquire absence of the uterus by a hysterectomy, and the biggest group is probably the cervical cancer group. And then, of course, you can have a uterus, but it's not functioning, and that can be because of a malformation. It could be because of that you have had an infection and you have adhesions in the uterus, or that you have large myoma, or it could just be an inherent implantation failure. We know that even if you have what looks like a normal uterus, it will never implant an embryo.
So as an obstetrician and gynecologist, do you encounter a lot of women who would benefit from procedures to repair the uterus or replace it with a transplantation?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we have calculated that the number who could benefit of a uterus transplantation, a full uterus transplantation, would be about 10,000 in a population of 20,000 in a population of 100 million people. So in Sweden, with 10 million people, would be 2,000 women. But I think the group, and that relates to the work we're discussing, that would benefit from a uterine repair, where you would not take the hill, is a lot larger. And that is, of course, those who have a uterus, but it's injured. That could be by myomectomy, but more common today is that you've had several cesarean sections and you get a big scar on the uterus where you've had a cesarean sections and the uterus cannot tolerate a new pregnancy because the wall is too thin, and that would have applications. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But no one has done the calculations, and of course that latter group will be larger in a population where you do a lot of cesarean sections. Like in Latin America, the section rate is very high. In Sweden, it's fairly low.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a chance to speak to women who've received a uterus transplantation and have had a healthy baby?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also delivering the babies because together with my colleagues, I do the cesarean section also and the transplantation. So we follow them. And also the IVF, so we follow them through the whole thing. And we, of course, we get to know them a lot, very good. And in Sweden now, we have delivered 10 babies with this, and the 11th is coming soon. So it's not routine, but we get used to the procedure. We are not at all as worried as we were the first time because we didn't know what to expect them. So it's not routine, but it's like all cesarean section is a little excitement for the surgeon and for the parents.
Mm-hmm. Do the mothers say anything about going through, you know, it must be a very extensive process and surgical procedures and everything. And to then be sort of finished with that and have a baby, does it seem to you that it's a different experience for them?
I mean, they're, of course, very, very grateful because when they were young, they would never think they would have the chance. And you probably know that in Sweden and most countries, there's no alternative because gestational surrogacy is not allowed here. So this is the only chance. But, of course, what we have, of course, followed up all our participants, both those with babies and some with no babies. And most are very grateful that I participated in the trial because at least they tried to get a baby.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky because most have got babies in our trials. But sometimes there are failures, but they're still happy to participate so far.
Mm-hmm. How successful has it been, uterus transplantation?
It's too early now because we haven't closed the first trial.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the success rate will be... if you look at the take-home baby rate, which is what is important, because a uterus transplant is only successful when it has delivered a healthy child. I think it will be like 70 to 80%. And that's high. It's very high. Mm. Then we should remember these are the initial stage of this procedure. So it will get better and better by time, as all medical procedures or surgical procedures.
Mm-hmm. So as exciting as those rates are, it must be quite difficult to obtain organs for transplantation. And then, of course, I understand that you have all the issues of immune rejection. And so the uterus has to be removed after the babies are born. Is that correct?
Yeah, it has. We have some with two babies. So, I mean, you can have one or two or three possibly. But we say the maximum time should be like 6 or 7 years with immunosuppression. But we also have a case of monozygotic twins. One, the sister with three babies giving the uterus to her monozygotic twin. And she has one baby now. And, of course, she can keep the uterus for many babies and for lifelong use. And that's interesting because you may know that the first successful kidney transplant in the world was also between monozygotic twins. And that was in... Harvard in 1954.
I didn't know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
That. So the paper that I wanted to talk to you about today is a scaffold that is used to repair the uterus. Does that, if that was moved to clinical practice, I mean, right now in the paper they use it in rabbits, so it's early stages, but if they move that to clinical application, what would be the advantages of that over a transplantation?
I mean, the advantages would of course be, first, we have to say that it could not replace a complete uterus, but it could probably repair a malformed uterus or a uterus which would not be capable of holding a pregnancy. And of course, the advantage would be that you would not need any immunosuppression, and there would not be a risk, as it is in transplantation of a uterus. If you do a live donor uterus transplantation, would not be a risk of surgery in the donor. So I think the technique has a certain future, and of course we are also working on this aspect, and we have done that for the last 5 years. So of course I believe in it, but it's a lot of research until we are there. But I think this paper is a really important proof of concept that this work. We have done similar studies in the rat before, but of course the rabbit is a bigger animal, and the tissue they took in this paper is more extensive than what we had in the rat for some years ago.
So how does an animal model like a rabbit compare to humans? Would you need to try some other animal model in between moving to humans?
Yeah, I think like in the uterus transplantation project, we moved up from the mice to the rat, to the sheep, pig, and then to a primate species. And I think you have to apply this both to large animal species, like the pig or the sheep, and also to a primate species before you try it on humans. I think the results are good, but of course, they should be repeated, and more studies should be done, especially in larger animals. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mats, this has been really great. Thanks so much for making the time. So, as you know, I wanted to talk to you about the paper from Tony Atala's group. And first, I wanted to ask you if you could, for the listeners that we may have who haven't had a chance to read the paper, if you could just briefly summarize what they do in the paper.
Yeah, sure. This is a really nice and interesting study where they've used biodegradable U-shaped polymers to create the scaffold. They seeded these scaffolds with the autologous cells, and then they sutured this bioengineered graft into the uterus horn. And then they sacrificed the rabbits 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months after the surgery. And they assessed the regeneration and the healing properties when using this graft. They used immunochemistry to visualize uterus-specific markers, such as estrogen and progesterone receptor. And they found that this tissue that were the tissue engineered graft that contained the autologous uterine cells that actually had a lot of the glandular structures and vascularization, and they show remarkable regeneration in this animal group. And after 6 months, they also allowed some of these rabbits to mate and to test the functionality of the uterus. Quite amazingly, in 4 out of 14 rabbits, they restored fertility, and I think 3 of them went full term and could deliver a live pup by a C-section. And then they also saw that these pups were of normal size compared to what normal rabbit pups are. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, the most remarkable is not really the fact of live birth, but the extent the regeneration they showed with such a large graft, that's remarkable, I think. So
others, including your group, had been trying to make different types of scaffolds using different approaches to repair the uterus. What are the alternatives?
There have been several studies using different types of scaffolds. Some have used collagen scaffolds, even trying to include silk threads. Others have used even scar tissue formation that they have formed into a tubular shape and used for transplantation. All of these are conducted in rat studies that I mentioned now. We are looking into using decellularized tissue, so basically using donors, donor rats, to and then remove the cells from this uterus tissue and then use that as a scaffold that we recellularize with various types of cells. Or other groups have also tried this without cells and tried to repair uterine injury. So with quite good results. But in the rodents, we use smaller grafts. So I think this is a nice study where they show that it's possible to do this also in bigger grafts. I mean, Atala has over the years published several papers using very similar scaffolding types on different types of tissue. For example, the urethra and the bladder and even the vagina. And some of these studies have reached the clinic or been tested in human patients. So, and I think if I understood this correct, that the biomaterial used in this study is quite similar to those he has evaluated before, but he has applied this on the uterus using uterine specific cells for the seeding step. Mm-hmm. So, it certainly seems to be a very promising type of biomaterial for sure.
So you mentioned that only 4 out of 14 rabbits actually became pregnant, but it seemed like the tissue repair was maybe more extensive across the animals. How would you explain that only a few of the animals became pregnant?
That was my observation too, that the repair seemed to have been for most of the animals. So I think one potential reason for the rather low fertility number is that, of course, the placentation and the implantation is a crucial step in the pregnancy process. So I think maybe it could be, I mean, this needs further investigation, of course, but it might be so that there were some implantation failures happening after these constructs were used. And the number of fetuses in these 4 rabbits were much less as well compared to normal uterus tissue in rabbit. So I think it's probably quite likely that there was some kind of implantation failure happening. And it's not surprising. I mean, it requires a perfect vascularization for the placenta, you know, to obtain a good fetal development. And if that is not happening, I think the body will you know, stop the process.
So there are many animals in which you could do this kind of work. As you were mentioning, you could do this in rodents. They're doing it in rabbits in this paper, but you could go to larger animals, right, that resemble humans a little bit more. Yeah. What other animals would be sort of the next step?
And the experience from our lab is that the sheep model is great. And that would be a very nice next step, I think, for a study like this, using this scaffolding type. It has been, you know, our experience is that the sheep uterus is of a similar size to a human, and its vasculature and anastomosis sites are quite similar.
So the uterus of a rabbit obviously is much smaller than a human one, but if you were scaling to a human uterus, do you think that the size of the scaffold that they're using here would be sufficient to repair the types of injuries that are seen in human individuals?
Yeah, I think so. I actually think I'm very impressed with the size of the grafts they used in this rabbit study. I think it's getting to a pretty good size to repair a partially injured uterus. I think, yeah, definitely. It would be very interesting to test this in a larger animal model.
So just going back briefly to the low fertility rate that they see, can you speculate on what could be improved in these scaffolds to increase their rates?
That's a very good question. I think it might have to do something with the vascularization. It will be difficult with a biomaterial like this, but I think it will be interesting to use a graft which can be anastomosed, vascularly anastomosed. So perhaps that initial ischemia might be prevented. You know, the fact that this scaffold is so big that Atala and his co-workers used without using a vascular anastomosis to supply the scaffold with blood, I think could be a problem when it comes to fertility observations. So it would be interesting to use a graft with some kind of vasculature that you could connect to the patient, basically, or the animal. And perhaps that could improve the fertility. I'm just speculating here, of course.
Great.
Thanks you so for contacting me. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right, that is episode 6. Thank you to both Matts. That was Mats Brenstrom speaking on the clinical side of things in the first part of the podcast, and Mats Hellstrom in the second. Thank you both. Thank you to the Midwest Quiet. We use their music in this podcast. We use their music for the podcast First Rounders. You can find those podcasts wherever you do that sort of thing. Just search Nature Biotechnology in Forum or Nature Biotechnology in First Rounders. You'll find it. If you'd like to discuss this podcast or First Rounders or anything that our journal Nature Biotechnology does, you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is @NatureBiotech. This paper was published in Nature Biotech. We have taken that paper and moved it in front of the paywall for the next week. There's a link in the show notes to the paper if you'd like to read it. That is it. We have episode 7 coming pretty soon, hopefully real soon. And I say hopefully because who knows these days, who knows? That is all until then.
Yeah. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.